Last night, the Pittsburgh Penguins defeated the Montreal Canadiens 6-0. Sidney Crosby got his first goal of the year for the Penguins, who are right at 500 now and just outside the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference. Brian Burke is their president of hockey operations, and he spoke with us earlier and began by asking him how close this Penguins team is to what they envisioned at the start of the season.
Well, we haven't played with our whole lineup at all. We were hurt early. Sid had wrist surgery, and we had a bunch of injuries, and we had a COVID outbreak. So we haven't played with the whole group. So I'm going to give you a more precise answer in a moment, but I think it's miraculous that we're at 500, given the players we've played without. And it's really a testament to how the players have worked and stuck to the game plan. That being said, there's two unfortunate sides to this development, which is we wasted a good homestand. We had 8 games in a row at home, and that's where you try to make up some hay and didn't. And we wasted world-class goaltending. You know, Tristan Jarry has been terrific, and yet we're still at 500. So that's the two drawbacks. I think this team is pretty close. We're not ever going to be the same team until we get Geno Malkin back.
Yeah, Berkey, that's what I was going to talk about. Tristan Jarry didn't have the season that he envisioned last year being the number one. You know, what's been different about him this year from what you've seen in your experience? And, you know, how good has he been in light of all the challenges you guys have had in front of you?
Well, to me, and you know this, Jamie, there's nothing there's some things that only a calendar can cure. And in this case, Tristan Jarry had a really good year. We won a division title. People lose sight of that. And then his performance in the playoffs wasn't as good as he would like it to be. We see that as a normal progression for young goaltenders. You can point out half a dozen top goaltenders that struggled their first couple seasons. And we feel that's the case with Tristan. With Tristan, he's big. He's a superb athlete. He's a winner. He's been a winner everywhere he's played. And he's got amnesia. He gets over bad games quickly. So we really believe in him, and we think the goaltending is what we thought we'd get from Tristan Jarry. He's been terrific, and he's a great kid. He's a quiet kid. He never brags, never says a word.
Berkey, were you in Montreal last night for the game?
Yes.
How? Not that you really care, but how is that scene there? I know you've dealt with the Canadian markets where the fans getting a little bit ornery, or how was that experience?
Yeah, at the end they were getting a little bit ornery, but I mean, look, you know this though. Losing sucks. Losing is terrible in any sport. Doesn't matter. Losing in the Canadian market is infinitely harder. And when you're losing and by lopsided margins, it really gets hard. So I felt for Mark Bergevin last night. I had a nice meeting with him before the skate yesterday. He's a wonderful human being. But I felt for him watching the game, you know, other than Cole Caulfield, who I thought had a couple of great shifts, a half a dozen of them. Other than that, they didn't get much done. So that's just hard. And I know people are throwing rocks at everyone in Montreal, but I've been in that seat and I've had the people boo me, so I'm not going to say too much.
And by the way, Mark Bergevin tested positive for COVID today, just to add to the laments for Montreal. Brian, how do you avoid things going from bad to worse in a Canadian market? You talked about the challenge, and there's probably markets in the U.S. where it happens as well, but it's been talked about a lot that in Canadian markets where the media pressure and the fan pressure can be so intense, what kind of things can you do to keep the guardrails on?
Yeah, great question, Gord. And I will tell you this, I'm not complaining. Like, I listen to guys whine about the media in Canada, and they're like, oh, here we go again. The simple fact is, the Canadian markets are fantastic to play in when you're in first place. There's the adulation and the knowledge, the close following of the team and the adoration that they have on the top players. It's really cool. And it's a special part of playing in Canada. The downside is that when you're not playing well, you get thumped. Even the mild mannered media at some point turn, and social media turns right away. They turn like a, you know, it's like a weather vane. So they have one bad game and they want to fire everybody and trade 16 guys. So that's the peculiar, like when I first got to Vancouver, I went there in 98, my second tour, and there was no social media to speak of. And, you know, it was pretty mild being the GM there. It's very different now.
Berkey, I had the pleasure of seeing you this weekend, you know, a couple amazing events celebrating some great people. You know, talk about Jerome going into the Hall of Fame, and then obviously Dion getting honored on Tuesday night for his retirement.
I'll do that. Sorry, Gord, I did not answer your question. What are some of the guardrails? I think what has to happen is you got to simplify your game. The simplest way to win games is to dumb it down. So play more on your end, you know, chip pucks out, chip pucks in. It just simplify the game until your touch gets back. So that, and then buy earplugs is the only other advice I can give. So I didn't mean to not answer your question. I'm sorry. So turning to first Dion, I thought they did a really nice job. The Leafs are really good at that. The retirement ceremony for Dion and Alicia was beautiful. It was respectful. The video was great. I thought it was first class, and Dion Phaneuf was the captain of the Leafs for 6 years, longer than just about anyone, I think, except George Armstrong, and he was a good captain. We didn't have team success during my tenure and his, but I'll take the blame for that. I don't blame Dion for that. I thought he was a really good player for us and a wonderful person, so that was cool. And then seeing Jerome go in, you know, I had the distinct displeasure of having to play against Jerome McGinley teams for most of my career. And it wasn't any fun. And I never had him in Calgary. He was always gracious. You'd meet him, you know, in a rink or outside the building somewhere, and he'd always be polite and hello. I really liked him, but I hated playing against him. This guy would find ways to beat you. And he could change the game on a pivot, like 90-degree pivot. So you'd be going along and it'd be slow. He'd start a fight. You know, if the team is 2-0, Vancouver's up, and we're carrying the play, and he'd start a fight, and next thing you know, it's 2-2. Or he'd score a big goal. And I don't remember him ever scoring when it was 4-1 or 5-2. I remember Jerome scoring when it was 3-2. And just a marvelous competitor, a marvelous individual, and a deserving inductee for the Hockey Hall of Fame.
A classic example of a really nice guy who was not nice on the ice. And I mean that in the best way. Like he was a mean, hard player a lot of the time. Berkey, I want to ask you about Pittsburgh, you know, because I think, you know, the Stanley Cup generation is still there. I mean, Malkin's not back yet, but presumably he will come back at some point. You've got Sidney Crosby, you've got Letang. How much do you owe it to those guys to keep trying to win now?
Well, it's a case of, it's not so much what we owe to those players, although I agree with that assessment or characterization. It's as much as how realistic is that hope and that wish. And we think it's very realistic. These are three elite players, two of whom are in the last year of their contracts. And right now, one is injured. Letang's playing some great hockey for us. So we'll wait and see. There's a function here of what's fair, what we can afford, and where we go going forward. But that's a different discussion for a different day. But certainly our intent, and we went through this in the interview process last fall, was that was the plan, see what we could get done with this group.
So in that case, Brian, would you be, you know, inclined, would the Penguins be inclined to add to this team and to maybe sacrifice some picks or some prospects to add to this lineup now?
How can we add to this lineup now, Gordon? I'm not being a smartass. We are capped out.
Well,
we moved heaven and earth to get under the cap for this year.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess if you included a player with a contract and a pick for something, I mean, I'm just curious if that's something that would be on your menu if you could do it.
Well, I can't right now. There's not much we can do. And if you're talking about moving a player and freeing up money and spending that money on a player back, I'm not sure you've netted out much. But it's not an unfair question. I'm. Like many teams, there's not a lot we can do right now. It's that simple.
Berkey, Gord's kind of new to radio. He's a TV guy. Sorry about that question. But I want to talk about Christopher Letang. Can you touch on Letang a little bit? I love the player. And playing on a team for so many years with Crosby and Malkin, there's probably not enough attention on him. He's one of those guys that never looks like he ages the way he moves the puck. He's a fantastic player, isn't he?
Yes, and he's having a fantastic start to the season. The issue has been, obviously, durability has been really good for most of his career, but the last couple of years before Chris got here, the team would say, and I think he would concede, that we had a couple of years that weren't really up to par. So the question is, what are you buying if you extend him? What are you getting? He's 35, I believe, he turns this summer. But he's, you know, he's turned back the clock this year so far. He's been good. He's playing big minutes. He's physical. He's making good plays. And he's a great guy. He's a great human being. It's nice to have him here.
How much are you enjoying being back in the saddle, Brian?
Well, I liked what I was doing. I was happy. Like when I settled into my routine with Sportsnet and with Hockey Night, I enjoyed that. I worked very hard at it. I don't know how good I was at it, but I think I was getting better, and I worked at it. And I thought, okay, this is my career. This is the rest of my career. So to get this opportunity, it's like I was never contemplating getting back in. So when I got this opportunity, and it's with Pittsburgh, for God's sake, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Not like you're going to work for any other team, you know, some bland team that's never won anything, that has no history or tradition. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins. So I leaped at the chance, leapt at the chance, pardon my grammar, and it's been fantastic.
I do want to ask you about Vancouver. You mentioned it a moment ago when you talk about Canadian markets. And look, it's every market is unique in its own way, but for Jim Benning, the just torrent of abuse that he's received, you know, fans chanting fire Benning at games, the media on him, social media tough. How much sympathy do you have for him?
A ton. Well, first off, he's a great guy. He played for me. I had him in the Vancouver Canucks organization when I was an assistant GM. He played for me. He played. We sent him to Milwaukee, and he finished his career in Milwaukee, if I'm not mistaken. But he played for us. He was a captain or an assistant captain on our first year team in Vancouver in 87-88. He was a terrific player. He'd been a longtime NHL player and a great guy. So this is a guy we had as a character guy or an organization that we really believed in. He's had a good career in management. He's a great guy. So how do I feel for him? I sympathize for him. I've been there when they're chanting and booing. I've been part of that. It's no fun. And it's been intensified, like you said, Gord. The whole industry is intensified on the hate side, but Vancouver's a schizo market. It's like they hate everything there.
And so when it happens, how hard is it personally?
Oh, I'd say there's two answers. I think it's tough for everybody because the losing alone is enough. When your team is losing, that's enough to crush you as a person, like as a hockey guy. That's hard enough. Just walking that mile with the players, losing game after game, that's enough. That's enough cruel and unusual punishment for anyone. When you heap the abuse on that comes particularly with social media, there's only one thing you can do. And I truly managed to do this, but I think very few people do, which is tune it out. Like, it's just white noise. It's not going to affect your ability to win. It's not going to get you fired. You're going to get fired because you don't win enough games, not because people are screaming and yelling. Tune it out. Focus on the team. But again, I think there's steps you take. You talk to the players, tune it out, and then dumb it down. Whatever you're doing is not working. Make it simpler. It might not be the most scintillating hockey, but make it simpler. Focus on fundamentals. Cut your goals against down. Get your special teams a little better, but dumb it down and get your work ethic back where it has to be. There's really no other way to come out of a slump that I know of.
Berkey, you've been around the game a long time, and you know, I keep watching night in and night out, and I see this McDavid. It's highlight reel after highlight reel. I mean, you know, have you seen a player, and I mean, you've been around for generations, have you seen a player this electric, this dominant? I guess Bobby Orr and you know, other players come to mind, but, you know, is McDavid in that ilk?
Well, he's in that category. When you're talking about this, Jamie, when you're talking about elite players and superstars,
right,
you're talking about royalty. And I don't like where people say, oh, this guy's the best player, that guy's the best player. We're so fortunate that we've got a generation of players like that. But this guy's on the short list of any list you do where you talk about the most dynamic or exciting players. When you use those adjectives, you're talking about special players. And he is special. I said this when I was in Calgary. I used to hold my breath when he got the puck. Like, our guys would get the puck and I would hold my breath. That's with Connor McDavid. And I remember one night, one of the first times we played against him, we got the puck, or Connor got the puck, the Oilers got the puck, and Connor hadn't touched it yet. But Mark Giordano and TJ Brody, two pretty good players, two pretty good skaters, see that McDavid's going to get the puck. They both turn and sprint in the opposite direction. They're sprinting toward our goaltender. All you can see was the backs of their sweaters and read their numbers. And they're sprinting because they know they've got to generate enough foot speed by the time they get to the second blue line to have any chance against the line rush. So he's a dynamic player. He's exciting. The only player I've ever had that I think was as fast as Pavel Bure, and he was the fastest player I ever had till I saw Connor. But I've seen the debate, who's best, who's this, who's that. I hate watching Connor McDavid play when my team is playing. I'm terrified.
You forgot to mention me, Berkey, when you're talking about speed like
Very
that.
Good point. This is a good point.
That was an equipment malfunction. Oh, I talked about you about 20 seconds before, and they bleeped it.
All right, bud. Thanks.
Brian, thanks for talking to us. Enjoy being back in Toronto.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Brian Burke earlier.